glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. But still, to teach us, he was observing the regular principles of a sannyasi very, very strictly. These things to teach us. No.
Now do maybe your mind.
greatly fortunate ones,
Jinebhyam,
who are very poor,
Jogdam,
to burn to ashes,
Artha,
you deserve,
Vidvaradayishavaha,
desiring to bring about an increase,
Yuyam,
you, Prajana, of all living entities who have taken shelter of you, Pattayana, the masters or protectors, Smritaha, known as, translation of what I should have O greatly fortunate ones, what's the Sanskrit here for greatly fortunate? You should not kill these poor trees by burning them to ashes. Your duty is to wish the citizens, prajas, all prosperity and to act as their protectors. So who's speaking here? Who are they speaking to? Who burned up all the trees? Their protectors. And who do you think is asking them to stop? The deity of the trees. The deity in charge of the trees. Well, greatly fortunate ones, you should not kill these poor trees by burning them to ashes. Your duty is to wish the citizens, prajas, all prosperity and to act as their protectors. It is indicated here that the government or king has the duty of protecting not only the human beings, but all other living entities, including animals, trees, and plants. No living entity should be killed unnecessarily. So if you say no living entity should be killed unnecessarily, that automatically implies that there must be some time when killing is necessary. It doesn't say no living entity should ever be killed, that no living entity should be killed unnecessarily. Oh, greatly fortunate ones. Why are the Prachetas so fortunate? Why is he calling them Mahabhava?
Because they perform austerities.
They perform very austerities. What is it? Which means they're in the family of? Your sons are Pratini Varsha, means they're in the family of? Guru. And why else are they Pratini? Couldn't they see? They saw Lord Vishnu. Someone came up to you and said, I saw Lord Vishnu. Wouldn't you say, wow, you're really fortunate? And how else have they seen? Who's their guru? Lord Shiva was their guru previously, before they entered the water, and at the end of their household life, when they took vanaprastha, then Narayana was their shikshaka. So they had Lord Shiva as their guru, and they got to see Lord Vishnu personally. Now this story is also told in what canto of Bhagavatam? Fourth canto. And this same incident is described a little differently, in fact, in terms of reaction to the burning of the trees in the fourth canto, chapter 30. So we know the Prachetas were going to perform austerities for the purpose of for being good kings and having good children and ruling the earth well. Just like Shivabhakti Sananta Sarasvati, he took the austerity of chanting 1 billion names before starting his movement. So he understood that before doing any endeavor, there has to be some austerity. And Krishna says about create, maintain, and destroy everything only by penance. This is true also materially speaking. Before you do something, before you're successful, do you usually have to do some austerity? Is that true? Yeah. Is going to school an austerity? Generally? Sorry. It's an austerity, right? No matter how much you like learning, do you really like to take exams and fill out all the workbooks and sit in your seat and listen to your teacher? If you want to eat, you have to do what? You have to work? You grow food? Is that an austerity? Is that food? You want a house? What do you have to do first? You have to build it. Or work hard for someone. Is that an austerity? Does everything for yourself. Austerity. So the Pratyekas knew that before they could do the duty given to them by their father, that they had to become qualified. They had to do this austerity. So they were doing this austerity, and Lord Vishnu came to them personally. So that's pretty nice. That doesn't usually happen. The Vishnu comes to the person. He says, I'm very pleased with you. And that is a whole other discussion. A very nice story. He says, I'm pleased with you for cooperating in devotional service. Wonderful purports there about the value of cooperation in devotional service. And he says, this is one of those times when the Lord says, I give you all your material desires and you get to go back to home, back to Godhead. So, there's a few instances like that. Sometimes we hear that Krishna, if you ask him for money, he takes away the money you already have. Some devotees are afraid to go to Krishna for their material desires. Unfortunately, they go elsewhere for their material desires. But anyway, this is one instance where Krishna said to them, you'll fulfill all your material desires, you have strong bodies for a long time, you enjoy all the facilities of this world, and you'll be going back to home, and you'll attain your devotional service. And there's some wonderful reports there about how this material facility was used by the Pratyekas in devotional service. Then they come out from the water, and they're ready to take up their service. But Lord Vishnu also told them they'd get married, which is why it's being brought up in this section of the Bhagavatam. Because here, Maharaj Pratyek is asking about the secondary creation. And therefore, we're going to hear about their son, who's Daksha, reborn, and his children, and how they populated the universe. Therefore, the Pratyekas are being brought up here again. So Lord Vishnu told them to get married. He told them who to marry. We don't, also, people talk about a marriage made in heaven, but usually you know, it's not like God personally comes and says, I want you to marry this person. And this is one of the only two cases mentioned in Bhagavatam of a woman having more than one husband. So all 10 brothers married one woman. And she was the daughter of a sage who fell down with a demigod. And she was raised by the deity of the trees. And the deity of the trees is going to offer this girl to the Pratyekas to pacify them. So they come out of the water, and they're ready to take over the earth, and they see that there's just trees everywhere. So, you know, let's say that you're told, okay, I want you to go to this, your spiritual master, or maybe God himself even tells you, I want to go, you to go to this place, you know, marry this girl, go to this place, develop it, do agriculture, create a community, and you go to the property, and all you see are trees. So what's going to be the first thing you can do?
Find some more.
What are you going to do the first thing? You're going to clear the land. Right? You have to clear the land. So the Pratyekas understood that in order for there to be agriculture, in order to feed the people, they had to clear the land, they had to take down the trees. And in the fourth canto, Prabhupada describes this as a good thing. That there's no use in having trees that don't produce fruits and flowers, clear them and plant crops. Here, however, it's being presented as a bad thing. So the fourth canto is being presented as something good, that the Pratyekas are destroying the trees for agriculture, and here it's being presented as something bad. That the presiding deity of the trees is saying, what are you doing? You're supposed to protect the citizens. And Prabhupada is saying, here, don't cut down the trees. Now, what's also especially interesting about this is that the Pratyekas were blessed by Lord Vishnu. The Lord said, you're all pure devotees. You're free of all material desires. And yet here they're being corrected, rebuked by the deity of the trees for being unnecessarily angry. Reminds me somewhat of the story of Dhruva Maharaj, who also saw the Lord, who was also blessed with having all of his material desires fulfilled, and going back to home, back to Godhead, who was also told to rule the world, and who, when his brother was killed by a yaksha, went after the yakshas and started wiping out all the yakshas, rather than just the one yaksha who killed his brother, and was then also corrected at that point by Kuvira, who said, don't kill more than necessary, just do your duty. So very similar circumstance here. The Pratyekas are trying to help the citizens, the Prajas, we have the word here, Praja. They're trying to help their citizens to eat. And the deity of the trees is reminding them, wait a minute, the trees are also your citizens. So how are they going to benefit both the human citizens and the animals who also depend on the agriculture of the field and the tree citizens? Do we sometimes have this kind of problem? Right, we're given a duty to do. Probably where Vishnu doesn't show up on Garuda with eight arms to give us our duty. Maybe for some of you, but most of us, I don't think that happens. For some of us, we may get our duties directly from Guru, but in some way we're given our duties. We read them in the Shastra, okay, I'm a Kshatriya, or I'm a Brahmacharya, and then we read these are the duties of my particular Varna and Ashrama. Or we're asked to do some service, finding some way. Somehow we understand what is our duty, and we go to do our duty, and we find out that to do this part of our duty and this part of our duty, it's not very compatible. And there's some kind of a conflict. Now, many years ago, my God sister Lakshmani wrote a letter to Prabhupada, and she said, I want to do my deity service, but I have a baby, and I don't know what to do. How do I take care of my child and do my deity service? And Prabhupada said, just like a woman at home, she never neglects to take care of her bunch of hair. He said, in the same way, you should not neglect your children. He said, this takes some common sense. Do not do one thing at the expense of another. Do not do one thing at the expense of another. That's the problem they're having, right? How to do one thing without it being at the expense of another? How to benefit the people without hurting the trees? The doctors, at least they used to, I don't know if they still do, but they take this oath, first do no harm. First do no harm. Don't destroy something in the attempt to save it. Right? Here it's going to be explained in the next verse that the trees also provide food. You're cutting down the trees to grow food, but the trees also provide food. Plus they provide so many other things for human society. By shelter, so many other things. So we're going to look here at what is the difference between protection and exploitation. Because in deciding what to do, am I allowed to hurt one set of people, or am I allowed to cause harm in one direction for the sake of a good purpose? Do the end justify the means? Do you ever have that circumstance? That in order to do your duty, it seems like you have to do something wrong? Oh, I'm remembering many years ago, must be more than 10, maybe 15, I got a phone call from someone, I don't remember his name, I don't know who he was, I don't know how he got my number, I don't know why he called me. Anyway, he called me and first started asking me some questions about Krishna book. He said, I want to write an article, do you know where this and this and this and this, and someone told me to call you. So, okay, started answering his questions. Then all of a sudden he started criticizing all the leaders of ISKCON. Who is this person? And he said, my service to Prabhupada is to destroy ISKCON. And I said, excuse me, sir. But there are people who think like this. The way I'm going to do some service is to destroy. And sometimes it seems like that. In order to accomplish something, I have to cause this harm. I have to criticize somebody. I have to tear something down. I have to. Yes, I know this thing isn't good, but I have to do it in order to accomplish my mission. You ever run into anybody like that? Yeah. Or have you ever had that problem yourself? You want to accomplish something and you think, I can't do it without causing some disturbance? Has anybody ever had that problem? Or in everything you do, there's no conflict. You never have a moral conflict. All the means you have of accomplishing things are all nice. Do you ever have to deal with a difficult person and you might have to say something negative to them? That ever happen? And you're afraid you might offend them? But you can't do the service you've been given without maybe offending them? So the first thing we're going to look at is the difference between protection and exploitation. Because here, the prajñas have to protect. And then we're going to look at us. And each of us has someone or something that we're supposed to protect. And we also have someone or something that's supposed to protect us so that we remain as protectors and not exploiters. And then we're going to look at unintended consequences. Because what's happening here, the deity of the trees is saying, hey, you're going to have an unintended consequence. So exploitation is the basic mentality of a conditioned soul. In fact, because we want to exploit, therefore we are here. If I'm here, I want to exploit. That's pretty much a given. Unless you're an interested sitter who's coming to preach. You know, unless you're one of the prison wardens or the prison directors. But if you're one of the prisoners, then we can understand I have a desire to exploit. That's the basic difference between a liberated soul and a conditioned soul. I see the things of the world and I say they are mine to use as I like. As the Christian writer C.S. Lewis wrote in his Screwtape Letters, he said, one should think, a materialist thinks, that this thing is mine to do with as I like. Not mine to care for, but my thing I can destroy if I want to. It's my toy, so if I like, I can break it. If I like, I can play with it. If I like, I can break it. It's mine. So we tend to look at everything and think, this is mine. My clothes, my house, my family, my money, my car. And I can do with it as I like. I can spend my money on the things I like. I can drive my car to go where I like. I can put the kind of clothes I like on my body. I can put whatever food I like into my body. It's mine. I can use the other people and animals as I like. I can kill the animals, I eat them. I can cheat people. Or whatever I want, I can protect them. And protecting, one is thinking, right? Is Shivashtam, I'm sorry. One is thinking, I have my quota. Krishna's given me my quota to take care of. To protect. As the Krishna say, to steward or to husband. I have something I'm supposed to take care of. Like somebody may say, oh, here's my bag. Can you watch it for a minute? Krishna Kshetra told me that his shalagram shoes were stolen once in the airport, that he needed to use the toilet, and he asked the devotee who was with him, please watch my bags. And he had like a little shoulder bag, and when he came back, it was gone. The devotee hadn't properly cared for his bags. Here, take care of my things for me. I'll be right back. So that's what Krishna's doing. Krishna's saying, here, take care of these things. Right? Born naked, die naked. Will Krishna ask for them back? Definitely. And that's how we know they're not ours. So the mood of the devotee is protecting. To do it on behalf of Krishna, for Krishna. And if I'm watching your things, I have to watch your things the way you'd like me to watch your things. I can't watch your things the way I'd like to watch them. Just like in the school, we're taking care of so many children, so the teachers don't think that they're their children. They think these are the parents' children. And the parents should be thinking these are Krishna's children. If the parents send the children to the school to learn English and mathematics and science, and instead we teach them juggling and, you know, elephant care, and the parents come to pick them up. So what does my child learn in mathematics? Oh, we haven't taught them any mathematics. We just taught them how to care for elephants. We just had someone submit an article to back to Godhead, how to take care of an elephant. I don't think back to Godhead is an elephant care manual. So the parents wouldn't be very happy. They'd say, wait a minute, you know, I gave you my children to care for because I want you to teach them mathematics, not elephant care. I think they'll put them in another school. So when we're taking care of Krishna's property, we take care of Krishna's property the way he designed. And that's protection. I know, who are we supposed to protect? Now, that really depends upon our varna. So who do the kshatriyas protect primarily? The citizens, yeah. But what specifically, what citizens mostly do the kshatriyas? Directly. Humans. Mm-hmm. The kshatriyas are meant for protecting the humans. Who protects the animals and the land? The Vaishyas. Who protects things? protects ideas and truth in religion. Problems. So if you're a Shudra, you have a responsibility to protect things, to make sure that things are used properly in Krishna's service. If you're a Vaishya, you have a responsibility to protect animals on the land, to make sure that the land uses organic fertilizer and keep not destroying the land. If you're a Kshatriya, you're protecting the persons, and if you're a Brahmana, you're protecting the truth. Now also, if you're a Brahmana, you're overseeing the Kshatriyas. And if you're a Kshatriya, you're overseeing the Vaishyas. And then the Brahmana, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas are overseeing the Shudras. So ultimately, you could say the Brahmanas are protecting everything, but the Brahmanas are not directly protecting. And who made sure that the Shudras are protecting and not exploiting? The three higher castes, particularly the Vaishyas. Who made sure that the Vaishyas are protecting the animals and the land and not exploiting them? Exceptions. Because, see, what's going to be the mentality of a Shudra, of the conditioned souls of a Shudra body? They're going to want to exploit. They're going to want to take the things of this world and use them for their own sense gratification. That's going to be their natural tendency. So therefore, the higher caste direct them, no, you take care of them. And what's the natural tendency of the Vaishya? Let's get as much from the land as I can. Profit. What motivates the Sudra is immediate sense gratification. What motivates the Vaishya is profit. A Vaishya will give up immediate sense gratification to get profit. But we see people, you know, big business magnates who are millionaires and they're still working. Why is it working 60, 70 hours a week? Why don't they just, you know, come to New Zealand and enjoy? Or Hawaii or something. Why are they doing that? Because they're more concerned about profits, even if it's at the expense of their enjoyment. Whereas a Shudra, if they get money, they just go and spend it. And the Kshatriyas, they also have a tendency to want to exploit the citizens, to want to get more taxes from the citizens, adulation from the citizens. That's again their natural tendency. The Kshatriyas, they will sacrifice sense gratification and even wealth for what? What motivates them? Fame and honor. They want to be religious, but for the purpose of being honored. So a Kshatriya will, Vaishya will do something for wealth, even if it violates dharma. An exception for something for fame, even if it violates dharma. That's going to be their tendency. Therefore, the brahmanas have to keep the kshatriyas in mind. The kshatriyas have to keep the vaishyas in mind. Just like at the start of the Industrial Revolution, those of you who study history, so the women used to work at home, making cloth at home, making various products at home. All of a sudden, they couldn't compete with the factories. And the women had, in order to contribute economically to society, they had to go to the factories. Where they were, exploited. The business leaders said, okay, great, you know, we'll pay you nothing. And the children who used to also work at home, making rugs, making cloth, helping on the fields, they were contributing but leading a healthy life. They were also working. They're working sometimes 12, 14 hours a day, doing dangerous work. And the government had to come in and make regulations for safety. And you see in some countries of the world where the government doesn't do this, how much the people are being exploited. How much the Vaishyas are exploiting the Shudras. I mean, it's such a difference, at least I'm probably not the same kind of thing here, but I'm not saying it works perfectly. But in America, they have all these health and safety regulations. You know, people who work in airports have to wear ear protectors and have to wear certain kinds of shoes and certain kinds of hats, and there's all these safety regulations. You go to a country like India, nothing like that is in place. Right? The government doesn't care. They don't care. You want to exploit your workers? Fine, go ahead. You want the workers to have, you know, health-related injuries? So what? And the same thing happens in Mexico or South America. You know, people are using dangerous pesticides and seeping into their clothes, and they're having all kinds of difficulty because the government doesn't have any regulation, because the Vaishyas are just concerned about profit. And the same way you see the governments, they just want to exploit the people. Sure, send them off to war and kill them wholesale just to get some oil. who cares about their benefit? So therefore, they need the brahmanas to keep them in mind. And even the brahmanas, but who's going to keep the brahmanas in mind? The Shastra. Okay. So the Brahmins have to keep themselves in line. They have to keep each other in line. And you see this perverted even in the modern society. If you want to become a doctor, you have to be recognized by other doctors. Isn't it? You have to pass the exam from the other doctors, or the other lawyers, or the other priests. So the Brahmins are supposed to regulate each other. And of course, when they stop doing that, then Krishna has to come, or send one of his representatives to again restore the Brahmana class, which keeps everything else in line. Does that make sense? So all of us have to protect something. And then we could also look at ashram, we could also look at gender. What are women supposed to protect? What are men supposed to protect? Who protects the women? Who protects the men? What are the brahmacharis protect? What are the brahmacharis protect? Everyone has some sphere that they're supposed to protect and someone who's supposed to protect them to make sure that they're not exploited. Because our tendency is going to be to exploit. That's our tendency. So here we see that the Pratekas, who are Kshatriyas, they're supposed to be protecting, but here one of the Devas is getting in the mind. Wait a minute, you're going over the line. You're not protecting anymore. You're not protecting your citizens. You're starting to explode. Stop. Can we stop? We want to look at unintended consequences. Unintended consequences, I'm trying to do something good, but the way that I do it ends up causing a problem. And it's one of the things they teach you extensively in management. That whatever plan you make is probably going to have unintended consequences. Now some of them might be good, but in this material world, most of them are bad. And often, as Prabhupada Maharaj says, the cure is worse than the disease. So we see this all the time in modern medicine. My mother, who died of Parkinson's and had a number of other diseases, and at one point she was taking, you know, a whole medicine cabinet full of medicines. And her stomach was hurting her so much, and she was going, this doctor, that doctor, the other doctor. And after so many years of this, she finally said, I cured myself by getting rid of 2/3 of my medicine. Right? There's medicine to cure headaches, and one of the side effects is headaches. This is very common. But one of my favorite examples of this is, let's stop unwanted, illegitimate, and abused children. Does that sound like a good idea? Good plan, right? Let's have all the children in the world be wanted and loved and born to their married biological parents. Does this, everybody agree? Nice idea? Okay. So the way we're going to do this is we're going to make widely available various kinds of contraception and even abortion. And that way, the only people who have children will be the people who want them. Does that sound logical? Sounds pretty logical. In 1960, the number of children born out of marriage in America was 5%. Today, it's 40%. Interesting. How did that happen? As soon as you start making contraception and abortion widely available and socially acceptable, what do? You separate sex from procreation. And as soon as you separate sex from procreation, then people are going to have more illicit sex. They're going to have more unwanted children. Interesting. The more they apply the cure, the more they produce the very problem that they wanted to solve. Or people like getting enough food. Then, you know, they're not healthy because they're not getting enough food. So how are we going to produce more food? Well, if we do monocropping, that means you just have a whole field of corn. In order to have a whole field of corn, you have to use a lot of pesticides. because when you grow different plants together, one plant will repel the insect that eats another plant, or one plant will harbor an enemy of an insect that eats another plant. As soon as you do monocropping, the insects that feed on that one plant, they have a whole holiday. So let's do monocropping. Then we have to use really heavy-duty pesticides, and we're not going to let the land ever lie fallow. We're going to keep producing over and over. Well, that depletes the land. Oh, we're not going to allow floods. Floods are really bad. They destroy people's houses. So let's regulate the flow of the rivers. In America, they do it with the Army Corps of Engineers, and then there won't be any more floods. Of course, the flood waters bring down fertile soil. So I'm using up the land, and I'm not allowing the floods. Wow, people are going to have so much food. And then in order to grow that many crops, I have to use chemical fertilizers. And then what if I produce? Disease. And the unintended consequence. So, you know, your house isn't getting flooded anymore once a year. I was watching a BBC documentary on the Ganges and how the people who live on the delta in Bangladesh and Bengal, that's part of their life. They get flooded every year. And after the floods, they have up to a mile deep of rich soil. So, you know, we'll get rid of that inconvenience, but now you all die of cancer. So this is the law of unintended consequences. You know, I think I'm going to save ISKCON by criticizing people, and then I'm going to be Vaishnava Alvara, which is a big elephant, and comes and uproots my whole garden. Didn't plan for that one. So looking at this, the first thing we should ask ourselves is, what am I supposed to be protecting? What is Krishna giving to me as my quota? And what is my mentality towards that? Am I protecting it, or am I exploiting it? And to ask that question, it's not simply self-reflection, but that means that we also have ourselves being protected by someone or someone else. That none of us think, okay, now I'm independent, and I can make all my own decisions about what I do and the things that I make. To admit honestly, I'm a conditioned soul, my tendency is going to exploit. If I'm going to protect those things under my care, I also have to be under someone's care. And we have seen in our own Hare Krishna movement, people who think they don't need to be under anybody's care end up becoming exploiters. One can even exploit the Shastra. How is that possible? Yeah, taking one little thing and building a philosophy on that. I just recently had one devotee say, Prabhupada says you can do this, it says it in the Ishopanishad. And someone says, would you please give us the quote, Prabhupada? And he gave the quote, and didn't say that at all. So he's like, huh? Everybody said that. Huh? How in the world did you get that out of that quote? So taking a little thing, taking something out of context, interpreting something in another way. So one should always be humble and not think, yes, I know how I'm going to save the day. I'm definitely protecting. So am I protecting, and do I allow myself to be protected? And then think, what are the real consequences of what I'm doing? Are they worth it? You know, if you have a dirty house and you burn down your house in order to get rid of the problem, you don't have a dirty house anymore, but you don't have a house either. You know, I've heard devotees say, oh, when I go to the temple, I just criticize the other devotees, so I'm not going to go to the temple anymore. And at least three different people know. You know, I'm spacing out chanting my mantra, I don't chant my mantra. Or the most common is, I can just treat the devotees anyway and every way because it's for my service. But that's what's happened with animals too. You know, we're getting a farm, and therefore we need to have lots and lots and lots of cows. Immediately 50 cows. We don't think about what breed we're getting. We don't think how suitable the breed is for our particular locality. And we start taking care of them with those automatic milking machines. And, you know, breeding them every year, and pretty soon we have 200 cows, and nobody can take care of them anymore. So I've seen this happen. We're getting a building, and okay, we're gonna buy this big property. We don't know how we're gonna pay for it. We're gonna have to have the devotees work, 80 hours a week collecting money for the next 30 years. And now you go to those properties 20 years later, and they're just falling apart. And nobody's there anymore. Now I'm gonna do some great service, but I'm not gonna think about long-term protection and unintended consequences. So how do we get this intelligence to decide whether or not I'm protecting or exploiting, to see whether or not I'm under protection, to think about the unintended consequences of what we're doing? It requires coming to a higher state of consciousness. It's not something one can just understand by logic. One actually has to be at a level to see the truth. And like Prabhupada said about common sense, if you don't have any, ask someone who does. So if we're not able to see the truth, then we have to be tightly under the control and under the direction of someone who can see. And that way, in trying to feed the citizens, we won't also bring down all the other truth. So, thank you very much. It's nice to be back. Questions, comments, additions, subtractions, corrections?
Should she
breastfeed Krishna or take care of the milk on the stove? Prabhupada says both of those milks were for Krishna. What to do first? He says Krishna will give you intelligence. But in order to hear Krishna, one has to be a little purified. Yes, well, that's also in the Bhagavatam about if you want to hear with rapt attention. It says you can only hear with rapt attention if you have a pure mind. To be pure in mind, you have to be pure in action. To be pure in action, you have to be pure in eating, sleeping, feeling, making. That's not so easy, right? That's not just, that includes the externals, but it's not just the externals. It says in the Isha Upanishad that even Mahabharatas have fallen down in the name of Mahaprasad. So it's not just that I'm technically eating prasadam, it's also my mood. Otherwise, eating prasadam in the wrong mood will eventually, that may take Prabhupada's 700 lifetimes. Because first you have to dry the wood and then you have fire. So both internal and external. If somebody's only sleeping 3 hours a day, but every time they sit down, they fall over, that's not being pure in sleeping. Does that make sense? Anything else? Yes?
Is a person who criticizes they can also be humble?
They could be. So it's hard to tell though. Am I being quiet because I want safety? Part of this is knowing who am I supposed to, who or what am I supposed to protect, and who or what is supposed to protect me. So I have a duty. If I have to protect somebody or something, criticize on the Pujetas. The Pujetas are all pure devotees. They just saw Lord Vishnu probably like half an hour before he was talking to them. And still, he's chastising them. Because that's his duty. That's his service. So, he must. Prabhupada tells that story of the boy who was raised by his aunt. And she just was very permissive. And he grew up to be a thief. And he blamed her. So if you have someone that you're supposed to protect or something you're supposed to protect, and you don't do that, then you're culpable. But then you also have to listen to those who are supposed to protect you. And generally, you don't try to protect your protectors. Sometimes. Generally, you don't. I mean, the Kshatriyas were supposed to protect the Brahmanas in terms of with weapons, but in that case, the Brahmanas were also their citizens. Kshatriyas also had a role that if somebody was falsely claiming to be a Brahmana, that they were supposed to punish them. Like a false guru was also supposed to be punished by the government. Just like the government is supposed to imprison people who claim to have a medical license but haven't actually gone to medical school. But still, the determination as to who's a doctor was done by the doctors, not by the government.
Could also be said that our first business is to protect ourselves. We read yesterday in Bhaktisiddhanta's Amitavani, and he said that our first business is to rectify ourselves and not to blaspheme and criticize others for their behavior. In that context, we could kind of extrapolate protection and rectification. We should be protecting our own consciousness and our own bhakti-mata by association and careful chanting, absorbing ourselves in Srimad Bhagavatam. That's our self-protection. We shouldn't be thinking or depending on others to come and do that for us.
No, we have to voluntarily put ourselves under protection before we can protect. The Vaishya can't protect the Sutras unless the Vaishya agrees to being protected by the Sutras. And how can I protect truth unless I'm also under the control of Guru and other Brahmanas? I can't do it. So yeah, it's first business. Unless I'm being protected, then how can I protect others? Can't do it. Can't. Because my tendency is going to be to exploit. My tendency is a conditioned soul. As you say, not a conditioned soul, no, that's not. But even the Pujetas, they're liberated souls. So yeah, first thing is you have to be protected. And yeah, that's something voluntary. And it's something internal, it's not just external. It's a mentality. And I'm going to be corrected. I'm just like the Pujetas. They take this correction. They don't say, well, who are you? We just saw Lord Vishnu, but you know, hey. He just told us that we're pure. Who are you for messing with us and telling us what to do? They don't do that. They accept it. Dhruva Maharaj also. He could have said that to me, but he could have said, I was touched by Lord Vishnu's functional. What happened to you? He said that. He says, yes, I accept. So yeah, first thing is one has to make sure one is protected, and that's not to get me forced. It's as much a mentality as it is an external action. It's not just that officially I'm under guidance, but internally I resent it. The only person who protects without being protected is Krishna. Then he place to play with his baby because it's fun. There he is with his mother. And Krishna likes to pray that mommy and daddy are taking care of him. Even here, he's acting as if we're feeding him. That's pretty fun. Where do we get the food from? What's the fire? Where are we getting our dory from? Where are we getting our intelligence from? It's all him. He says, I'm the intelligence of man. I'm the ability of man. I'm the heat of the fire. It's all him. But he's playing like that. That we're feeding him, that we're dressing him. So even Krishna likes that. But for the rest of us, you can't go off and, I'm going to correct the person or whatever I was supposed to correct, and nobody's correcting me. Then you get a lot of trouble. So yeah, first protect yourself. Definitely. First make sure you're properly situated. There should be at least one person who can say to you, like the tree deity, hey, you're off, you're out of line, stop, change. If we don't have at least one person in our life that can say that, and we'll say, yes, sir, we're in trouble, a lot of trouble. And we think we're glad. There should be at least one, hopefully, more than one, where we'll listen. Not just someone who has that official, oh, yes, yes, I have my picture of my Guru Maharaj on my wall like a pet. I have my name, I have my needs, I have my Guru, and I do whatever I want. Yes, yes, I have my Guru, and he's me. That's hard. Positions of authority over other adults. Can you always tell the adults under your care what they need to hear? No, because they won't listen. It's hard to be clear. Nobody ever wants to hear that they're wrong. We'll go on fighting. They probably talked about the scientists with the paper, scissors. Okay. Did you hear this right? You all know that game, rock, paper, scissors? You know that game? Probably talked about two scientists who were playing that game. And they drowned, and as they were drowning, they were still. So, one second. Thank you. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. All the rest of you will go.